The Buddha himself is always, he has always searched for the truth. There is no sugarcoating, there is no easy way, there is no, he didn't make it easy or more tougher or anything like that, but he just said what he had found and what the life is all about. If you examined the uncertain times, then you will find that the reason why we feel the uncertainty is because of our defilements, or the because of our anger, desire, ignorance. These are the three main reasons why we feel all the suffering in this world. All the suffering is because of uncertainty, and uncertainty is because we feel because of the anger, desire, and ignorance. These are the three main things which makes all the suffering in our life. Now, if we further investigate why we have the what is the anger, desire, and ignorance, then you will find that these three things fall into two doubt and expectations. Now, if you think further, why we have doubt and expectation is because of our self-cherishing or the self-clinging thought. If you get rid of your self-cherishing or self-clinging, and now that is where we reached the Buddhahood, that is where we reach the enlightenment. Now, it is very easier, of course, it's easier said than done, as I said, because in a few seconds, I have just told you the journey from the humans to the enlightenment or the Buddhahood. Now, the challenge is to implement these thoughts into your life. It is quite easy to understand that anger is not good, desire is not good, ignorance is not good. It's quite easy. Everybody knows that. Every Buddhist or any human being, would know that. But because of the implement, because we don't implement these thoughts in our life, so we are always going through pain and suffering. Now, to understand how we can get rid of these difficult times or the suffering is, as a Buddhist, we start with meditation. The benefit of short-term benefit of your meditation is to bring your mind to the present. Generally, the way we think or the way we live is that our mind is most of the time is in the future or in the past, rarely in the present. Even when we are thinking about present, we are already thinking about our future. So in the past, we feel the suffering. When we are thinking about our past, we feel suffering because we think about the future, because we fear that the things, bad things happen in our life, the suffering that we went through in the past, we may also feel that in the future. So that's why we feel the suffering. If you think about the future, if you think about the present, again, we are already thinking about our future. That's why we feel the suffering. Now, the future is like a blank canvas, because future is not yet arrived, so we don't know. So that's why we leave it to our imagination. Now, if you leave it to your imagination, which is clouded by our anger, desire, and ignorance, and there's no end to our suffering, because future, we can paint whatever we want, and because our mind is controlled by anger, desire, and ignorance, they will do all kinds of suffering, all kinds of bad things, all kinds of dangerous things. So it's very it's similar to when we walk in the dark place, or when we walk in night when there's no light. We feel uncertain, we feel fear, because we don't know what's in front of you, whether it's a hole, whether it's a blockage, because we don't know where we are walking, so we feel suffering and uncertain. So it's similar to that, because our future, we don't know the future, so that's why we feel all the suffering. So when you bring your mind to the present state, then your mind is more calm, because there's no uncertain in present. Present is already here, so we don't feel the uncertain. When you bring your mind to the present, you are more calm, you are more relaxed, you are more feel happy, as I would say. Because when you are relaxed and when you are certain, because it's already here, then we are not faced with the uncertainty, we are not faced with the fear and all these emotions. So that's why it's very important to bring your mind to the present state. When this happens, and you are more relaxed. And now the second benefit of meditating is that when your mind is in the present, you are more focused, because you have more control over your mind, because there's not much things we don't know, because you're already here. So you have more control over your mind. And when you have more control over your mind, you are more focused. When you have the more focus, then you can direct that focus on the, of course, now the main point of meditation is that you can now direct your focus to your suffering or your self-thinking thoughts or self-cherishing thoughts. When you do that, then you will find that there's no such thing as self-cherishing, or there's no anger, there's no desire, there's no ignorance. I mean, for example, when you get angry, I mean, of course, most of the time people don't think, for some reason, when you are faced with the uncertainty, when you are faced with difficult times, we stop thinking sensibly. Now, many people may think that, if you are an educated person, then you think sensibly. And that is not the case, because we know that so many educated people do all kinds of difficult things, or all kinds of, for example, committing educated people also commit suicide. Educated people do all kinds of wrong things. That is because when you are faced with the uncertain times, or when you are faced with the difficult times, you stop thinking. You stop thinking sensibly, which could be easily avoided. So that's what I'm trying to say, is that when you think, bring your mind to the present, and then you think sensibly. You think sensibly, then it is, of course, much easier for you to think, and to think more clearly. If you think more clearly, for example, and now let me give you an example, is that when you are walking on the, if you are asked to walk on the 2 feet narrow path on the ground or in any place, for example, if you're walking on a treadmill, it's quite easy to walk. I mean, you can walk no problem. But if you are asked to walk on the 2 feet narrow path in the higher altitude or the higher elevated place, then your legs are shaking, you have more difficult times, or you cannot, you are faced with fear. The 2 feet path is still the same, but because of the right and left is empty, because there is nothing to cling on, there is nothing to walk on, so you feel, you face with a fear. And when you face with a fear, now your imagination is taking control over you, and then you feel, oh, I could fall in the right, I could fall in the left. And even, I mean, you can, that's why Buddha said everything is in the mind. If when you have control over your mind, your suffering is gone. For example, I saw this bridge. I mean, I didn't been myself, but I saw a video of a bridge in China where it's made out of glass, a see-through glass. It's up in a very high altitude glass. And people are You can walk normally, but because you can see, and I thought it was a very good way of example of Buddhist teachings, because when you can see the floor and see through the floor, people are people can't people faced with fear, they cannot walk on the literally can't, they are literally dragging themselves on the glass. I've seen that. So I think it's really good, a perfect example of how once you have control over your mind, then you are more fearless, or the more certain things. So I think it's very important to understand that. And also, when you have control over your mind, then of course anything in your life. But of course, when I say control over your mind, and the way we should do is balancing. What we are lack is balancing in our life. Balancing means when you anything in your life, I think if you have balance, whether you are personal relationship, whether you are doing your meditation, whether you are doing your work, anything in your life, if you have a good balance in your life, or good way of balancing your life, then I think most of your problems, most of your troubles, most of your suffering will go away. For example, when I say balancing, if you care for somebody, if you love your children, your parents, your spouse, if you cling on to them, if you even your children, when you hold them tight on your arms all day long, then that is now too much. So I don't think for first few minutes they might be okay, but after that they wouldn't want to be held on to all the time. So I think the same thing with whether you take medication. If you take too much medication, it is of course dangerous. It is not the right thing. If you don't take any medication, and of course that also is dangerous. So there should be always a balance. Same thing with meditation. Even when you start with a meditation, when you are you can't meditate in the beginning for long periods of time. It has been said that when you start to do meditation, then you should do short periods of time, but many times, slowly, slowly, you can. As you go through the meditation, then you go your length of your meditation, prolong the meditation. So now, if you understand your mind, how your mind is like, in the Buddhist text, even told that it's like a waterfall, that our stream of mind is falling one after another. So you feel this continuity in your mind, but actually it is not the one stream. It's many thoughts coming one after, like when you fall, see a waterfall, you see one big water, but it's actually many drops, many water drops, which is coming one after another. So that's why it's becoming, you see a huge waterfall. So just like that, you have to control your mind. You are controlling the way you are controlling his mind is slowly, slowly. It's like saying when you have many water, it's like when the water falls on the ground, when you have the form a small kind of a lake. Then, of course, again, there's another waterfall. So slowly, slowly, waterfall, then it's dropped, it become a small lake, and then again, you fall another way. Then that's way, slowly, slowly, your mind is more calm and your mind is more controlled. I think that's very important. When you have more control of your mind, then, of course, there's no uncertainty. Buddhism, during uncertainty, because if you examine, there is no answer. There is no such thing as uncertainty. Of course, that does not mean that you should not be worried about your this, especially during this time of pandemic. You should be, of course, careful, not only during this pandemic, but all your life. you should be careful. You should be careful how we live our life. We should be careful when you're driving. You should be careful when you walk. We should careful be when you are running. For example, this period, when you should be careful wearing a mask or wearing a gloves or sanitizing your hand, washing your hand. All these things are very important. And I think that kind of the only thing is that, of course, if you just think for a second what you are doing. Of course, it is very normal that when we are faced with the difficult times, you stop things sensibly. The one of the ideas or one the trick that I normally suggest to people is that you take your position in. For example, you are going through a difficult time, and then when you can't think, then you give the same trouble or same problem. You imagine that some other people has the same going through the same difficult time. So what kind of advice would you give to that person? When you think like that, then you can start thinking sensibly. Then you can give that advice, the right advice, and then you can take the advice yourself and then practice that on yourself. So I think that is one way of very good way of practicing oneself. So I think but also we have to also understand that Buddha's life, what we have taught, what we were taught by the Buddha. As I said before, balancing life. Buddha was born in as a Prince Siddhartha in a kingdom of Kapalvastu. He was living in a luxurious life. I mean, any luxurious life you can possibly imagine. If you are a prince and especially during those times, you are basically, you can get anything you want. He was living the fullest of life. But he gave that up to find the truth. Then after that, when he left the palace, he went into the jungles, he went to all kinds of places, and he went through a difficult time. He did meditation without any food, even a small one grain of rice for one day. He ate that and he went through a very difficult time. And after 6 years of meditation, he said that this is not the right way to find this truth. So the two extremes of two, the luxury extreme and the most difficult poverty of finding the truth. He said that is not, two extremes are not the right path. So he said the middle way or the middle path. When you find the middle part, then that is where you have to find. Because so that means that you don't have to go to a retreat to find the truth. You don't have to go to a jungle, or you don't have to give everything you have, whatever you have, or your life. So once you start understand the importance of balancing, that's where Buddha's teaching is all about. We have to focus, or we have to learn more about Buddha's life. Right now, the way we practice is we are practicing more for this life, for this life's prosperity, for this life's success. And that is, of course, one way, but the success of this life is not the goal of Buddhism teaching. Buddhism teaching is to go out of the samsara, go beyond the, take control over your life. Right now we are controlled by our anger, desire and ignorance. These things are basically, we are slaves of anger, desire and ignorance. So these three things are controlling whatever we do, whatever we see, whatever we feel is through those defilements. So it is very important to take control over your life. I mean, of course, controlling once you feel, because you are already as a Buddhist, we are already inside, we are already enlightened. Buddha said every sentient being is equal and same. So that doesn't that means that whether you are Asian, American, Australian, African, any continent, any race, any whether you are rich or poor or anything, we are already, even insects or even the animals, we are all enlightened from inside. The only thing is that our mind is covered by our, just like the sun or the moon is covered by the cloud or the cloud, so that we can't see the sun or the cloud. But that doesn't mean that the sun is not there or the cloud is not there. So just like that, we are already enlightened from inside. We just have to find our way or find our path to the enlightenment. So that means that when you think about your anger, desire, and ignorance, when we clear our all these thoughts, then we will find that we are already enlightened. Because we have to also remember that things which are not there, we cannot get something, bring something new from outside. When you say enlightenment, that does not mean that somebody is giving you enlightenment. We have to go somewhere else physically or mentally to become enlightenment. You could be enlightened during this very lifetime. You could be enlightened at the very place you are sitting, at the very place you are staying. You don't have to do anywhere, you don't have to go anywhere. As soon as you find the truth, of course, as I said before, finding the truth and implementing the living your life through that is two different things. It's like saying I can swimming when you on the ground say, okay, you have to do, you move your hands, you move your legs and do this way and this way. That's how you swim, and as you are actually in the water and swimming is two different things. It's much easier to talk about it and then to implement that in the real life. So that we can all do it through our Buddhist teaching. We can implement through our daily practice. Daily practice is also really important. First thing as a Buddhist I would say is that the belief in yourself is very important, because the Buddha is inside you. Buddhahood, the enlightenment is inside you. So I think belief in oneself is very important. If you don't have the self-belief that I can do, I can also attain Buddhahood, I can also I can be also enlightened. Without that thought, then I think it's very difficult. So first thing first is that we must understand that, or we must believe that I myself can be enlightened or can achieve all the goals. So it is very important to, I mean, of course, it's very human nature to worry. But as the great Shantideva has said, that if there's a problem and if there's a solution, why we should worry? Because we have solution. There's no point worrying. If there is no solution, again, why should we worry? Because there's no solution. You can't do anything. So that's why worrying is, because you have just understand that worrying and suffering and uncertainty, all these feelings are because of our defilements. Anger, desire, ignorance. These things are coming out of the hope and expectation, and these things are coming because of ourself. All the suffering in this world is because of self thinking or self cherishing, because of my own ego, and so this is very important to understand. Once you do that, then I think It is very much easier way of living, much easier. I'm not saying that once if you practice that and all your suffering will go away and all, everything will be much easier. Your life will be much easier. It's a process that you have to go through. There is no easy way to do this. There is no easy. You cannot always imagine that somebody else give you. No matter how much initiation or how many teachings you will receive, if you don't implement, if you don't practice that in your daily life, if you don't start in your practice, if you don't include yourself in this way of process or in this way of living, then I think Buddhism can't help you much. I feel that Buddha's teaching, although it's very great, it is very meaningful, it is very helpful in your life, but most of the time people don't use it in your own life. We want blessings, we want somebody else do prayers, and then we want to make our lives much easier and much more. Prayers and teachings, of course, it's a great blessing. But what do you do with that blessing? Now, that is the big question we have here. We receive teachings from great masters. We have great masters at this very moment or with this very period of time. We have great masters, many great masters in all tradition. But how much of that great master's blessing and teaching are we using in our life? If you have the blessings, and what are we doing with that blessing? If you are a very rich person and you don't know how to use the wealth, you are living like with a lot of poverty, then what's the point of all this wealth? You have all the wealth, but you don't know what to do with those wealth. So that is also important to think, because we have great masters, great teachers, and we are receiving all those teachings. But as I normally joke with my friends and say that we are receiving teachings all the time, we are receiving blessings all the time, but I was wondering, what are we doing with these blessings? Where are we keeping those blessings? We are not using those blessings. We always want more blessings, but what's the point of a blessing if you don't use it? As I said before, I always make fun say to our friends that other than the teachings, we want everything from our master. We say we will serve the master, we will cook for you, we will wash your clothes, we will do clean the temple, we will do all the things, but only thing is that we will not follow your teachings. And that is the most important part we are missing. That is we will not get rid of our anger, we will not get rid of our desire, we will not get rid of our ignorance. That is the only thing that the masters wants you to do, and that is the only thing that we will not do. Other than that, we will do everything for you. We will drive for you, we will do all kinds of things. So I think it's a simple thing, but it's also very important to understand that. So my request, or as a fellow student of our teachers, and is that just to think. I mean, I'm not asking you to do retreats and all that. Just to think for a short period of time, and what we are doing, what we are, even small things we do. Am I doing this? If you examine, I mean, Buddhism is all about examination. Buddhism is all about the truth. So whatever feelings. Which you can practice this at in any time, is that whenever feelings you're going through, you have to ask yourself, why am I happy today, or why am I sad, or why am I angry? Is it because of my, if you feel angry to somebody or some reason, then you have to also think that, why am I angry? Is it because of my ego? Is it because of my arrogance? Is it because of my ignorance? Or is it because of my desire? And if you examine that way, then you will find that most of the time your anger will go away, because then you will find there's no reason to be angry. But of course, if you stop thinking like this, then of course you will always feel anger again and again. And mind is something, feeling angry and all this is of course done by your mind, is something that you need practice. Just like your physical body, you need practice. If you are a sports person, you need to do sports every day. If you are a cook or a chef, you need to cook. You need to do your practice every day. And any career, any thing to become a profession or anything like that, you have to practice. There is no shortcut to practice. There is no shortcut to experience. So just like that, your mind also needs practice, and that you can do in your daily life. If you see something in a television or a news, if you're reading about something, you saw on the way somebody is going through pain, or an animal is in pain or something like that, you can practice your compassion. You can practice your selfless thought. The more, it is proven, scientifically proven, that the more selfless thought you have, the more happier you are. The more self-thinking thought you have, the more suffering you have. Where you can start. More selfless thought you have, the more happier you are. The more self-thinking thoughts you have, anything to do with self, you have more suffering. That is the bottom line. So practice with your daily life, even small things. You start with small things, and as you gradually go, you can then think about more bigger things in your life. But start with small things. If you anything feelings you have, try to understand that feeling, then that feeling will go away. So that is how I would like to end my talk today. And if you have any, I think before we stop the talk, I think I would like to do a short meditation. We'll start with today to do meditation. Just imagine that in front of you have the Buddha, for example, this statue, Buddha statue. Just try to think. We don't have to think far and think very complicated things. Just keep your mind on the Buddha himself. Think about the physical body or the Buddha. Just keep your mind in there. So that's why your mind is not roaming around everywhere. So it's very important. Just for a moment, we will practice the meditation. Of course, some people, if you have more difficulty keeping your mind into the statue, then you can use a bell, or you can use a sound to keep your mind in that. Because you can do that for a short period of time, and then, of course, gradually you can do that longer and more easier. Thank you. For this way, I will end to end my talk. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer.
Thank you very much, Rinpoche. On behalf of Venerable Ken Rinpoche Jampa, the Tibetan Education Foundation, and the more than 200 Dharma students who are logged into the teaching today, as well as all Dharma students and all sentient beings across the world, we'd like to express our thanks to you for sharing your teachings today. Everyone in the audience, if you have questions about today's teaching, please type them into the chat box now. You can type in English or Chinese. If you speak another language, you can type in that language too, and we'll try our best to translate it, and we'll choose some of the most relevant questions from the questions that you asked now. And so to start us off, Rinpoche, you began the teaching by sharing that most of our problems come from lacking balance in our life. And so I'd like to ask you about the balance between self-confidence and self-grasping. Because we always hear, you should be confident. You already have enlightened nature. But then we also hear, all of your problems come from self-grasping. And so if we have both of these, how can we balance both of these ideas in a way that motivates us to keep practicing instead of feeling bad that we're not doing a good job?
Self-grasping and
self-confidence.
Self-confidence.
And the balance between them.
Grasping or not?
Dogging.
Okay. I think self-confidence, of course, it's really also, as I said before, balancing. Too much self-confidence is also not good, and also too less self-confidence is also, of course, not good. For most of the students, I believe they are going through the lack of confidence. I think it's also really important that to have the confidence to do your practice, that you can achieve Buddhahood, you can achieve enlightenment, you can be enlightened yourself. That is very important. And of course, if you have overconfidence, and of course that is dangerous. That is the also when you make a lot of mistakes, then you become relaxed, or you think you can do anything you want. So that is also not the right way. Balancing between low self-confidence and too much self-confidence is important. Second thing you said was the self-grasping. Of course, as I said before, that anything with the self-grasping or self-thought, any thought which begins with yourself, it is... same thing here, balancing, too less, because also important to understand that your contribution to your practice, if you think that I am the only one who can do this, or I am the greatest, or that is the also not the right, but you have to include yourself in this, your practice. Most of the time, I see people don't include themselves. The practice is done by the lamas or in the temple or the people in the retreat somewhere else in the high island, in some other place. But I think it's also they are not thinking about themselves. They are willing to help other people who are doing practice, but they are not trying to help themselves do the practice. So I think that is the, how to say, of course, again, balancing. If you don't, too much self-training means you don't need any help. You don't need any teacher. You don't need guidance. You don't need anybody, which is also the not the right way, I believe.
Thank you very much for entertaining the question, Rinpoche. Zoe, our Chinese translator, I saw there's a question in Chinese. Zoe, would you like to pose the question to Rinpoche?
Yes, Holiness. A person will ask, how do we explain the Dharma of origination to a 10-year-old child?
Dharma of origination?
Yes. How do we explain the law of karma or the origination?
Well, if you have right, then you have left. If there is right, there is left. I mean, so that's the easier way of putting. I think it's really easy. One way of saying that, as I talk to our children here in the student or in the school or in my own children, that if you want to, just like you want to be happy, similarly, other children want to be also happy. Just like you want to play with this toy, other people, children also want to play with this toy. Other children also want to be happy. Other children also want to eat the sweet things play with the holidays and all that. So I think you have to put themselves in the, you cannot only say, oh, you have to be kind to other people. Because if you always talk about others, I think children may get confused. Children may not understand because they have to put themselves in that situation. So I think you always put him in the conversation, say that just like you want to be happy, he also, the other children also wants to be happy. Just like you wants to eat this apple, other children also wants to eat the apple. So if you always keep the interdependent talk, yourself and others, and if you always include thing as equal and as same as all other living being or all other children, then I think it'll be easier for the child. I mean, we can start with that. That way of teaching, I think.
Thank you very much, Rinpoche. We have another question. This question is about samaya, or goals in practice. If we have set goals or we have taken samaya, but we are having difficulty in upholding our goals or reaching our goals or upholding our samaya, our promise to the Lama, how should we continue to practice? Should we change our goal? Should we discipline more? How should we proceed if we're having difficulty?
I think to start with, the kind of samaya, of course, you will, for example, we have the four major, no killing, no stealing, no lying, no sexual misconduct. These four things, that's very basic. We can say, okay, easiest, we will stop drinking, or we will stop smoking, or we cannot say, you don't have to say, I will do all the, keep you all your samayas. Because every, it's also really important that when we talk, teachings, give Buddha's teachings in general, teacher, when he talking to the crowd, we are talk about all kinds of things. It does not necessarily mean that you have to do all of those things at once. Of course, you can do everything, that's very good. But then samaya means the promise that you have with your guru. That is very customized. That is very personalized. let's say I will stop drinking or stop smoking or stop lying, but that is the slowly, you keep your samaya. I think the best of your ability. Trying, I think, is very important in this samaya. Samaya does not mean that you cannot make any mistake. You're not allowed to make any mistakes. And then there's a difference between you're not allowed to make any mistakes and you are trying your best. If you're not trying, then you make mistake, of course. But if you're trying the best of your ability, I think that is the very important part of your samaya, is what you're trying on, whether you're trying. Of course, we are all imperfect. We are all human, so we make a lot of mistakes. But we cannot let these small mistakes, stop from our practicing our samaya.
Wow, thank you for that teaching, Rinpoche. So you're saying we shouldn't let it discourage us. Thank you so much.
Of course, of course.
And Zoe, is there another question in Chinese that you have?
Yes. Let's see. I think this one, okay. A person asked about meditation. When we do meditation, our leg become four. So in that case, do we keep focusing or we just move our body to relax for a bit?
I think, as I said before in the beginning, that you should do your meditation in a short period of time. You should not do it for hours and hours. Then it would be very, just like your physical need, body needs also time to adjust. There's nothing your body can't do, or if anybody else is capable of doing, you can also do the same. You just need practice. Staying in a lotus position is difficult at the beginning. But if you do it every day, if you do it short period of time, like if you can do it for 5 minutes, start with 2 minutes even. 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, then you can do it slowly, slowly. It does not mean that, of course, physical body is helping your mind to meditate. It's not the main goal. It's sitting like this, sitting your posture is not the main goal of your... So if you are able to do your meditation, even while sitting on a chair or lying on a bed or while walking, we have walking meditations also. So I think it's also important that the point is to control your mind, to bring your mind to your present and bring your mind to a focus. So that is the main goal. Main goal of the meditation is not to sit, not to put your legs in a lotus position. So, of course, gradually, because this helps you, because the way our body are built, the way our veins go through, the way our this sitting position is the best position. If you can't do that, then of course you can do other ways of practicing. But the best way of our body is this lotus position, meditation lotus position. But you can also do meditation while, as I said, while sleeping, while provided you don't fall asleep, that you can meditate in that way.
Thank you very much, Rinpoche. That's a very powerful teaching, that the sitting posture is not the goal, but it's the practice of our mind. Let's see. We'll take... Rinpoche, may we ask a few more questions now? Is that all right?
Yes, sure.
So we'll ask maybe one or two more from the English side and one or two more from the Chinese side. So one question that we have is, if the fundamental problem is ignorance, is the solution for us to read more books? How should we address ignorance? How should we handle this problem in our life?
I think it's a very similar question to the meditation question. Is that first we have to think. Most of the time I find that we are not thinking. We just want a quick solution. And that's we find, you will ask somebody, well, what's the solution? It's even a simple things like, 2 plus 2 is what? You go straight away, go to your calculator and you take your mobile phone and then the 2 plus 2 is 4. You know, it's quite simple, it's quite easy, but you don't use your mind, you don't think because we want everything in a hurry. So I think that's where the just like the sitting position, books and these things will help you, of course, guide you. It gives you the an idea, but you cannot read different books and take all the things and you try to practice all of that. You cannot; it's not possible. So you can take whatever information you can take from the books and then try to implement them. Whichever ideas or the teachings that you can practice, you can do that, and that is how. Otherwise, my suggestion for you is, first thing is that you just think for a second. If you don't think, then even you read books, then it will not going to help you much. If you think most of the time, you will find the solution yourself. Remember that from inside, we are already enlightened. We are all Buddhas. So if you have 200 people listening to this talk today, that means we have 200 Buddhas listening in this conversation today.
If we are 200 Buddhas listening today, Your Holiness, then thank you very much for communicating to us in Sambhogic form for us to understand. Thank you very much. And Zoe, I think there was a really good question about depression and self-grasping in Chinese. Zoe, can you hear me?
I remember his question. He said, if depression is a form of self-cherishing, and...
Oh, sorry.
Oh, sorry, hold on. Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, sure. This question says, if depression is a form of self-cherishing, then we talk about we feel our emotion. For example, we have the emotion arises right now. That I know it's not right, but I just cannot control it. So how can I just deal with that situation?
I think one way of if you have that kind of emotions going through in your life, one way is the first thing is to understand that you to recognize that I think that's the right path. If you understand and if you recognize that this kind of emotion is the wrong, and that is it's like putting which you put on the horse on animals to control. I think it's like that. First thing is to recognize, and then you find a solution. Because if you don't know that you have a problem, if you don't know that you are this is a defilements, that whatever emotions you're going through is because of your defilements, then I think is more difficult. But once you understand, once you recognize that your emotions, all these difficult, depression is because of your self-sharing thought, that's a very good start. Then, as I said, examine. If you can't, if you're already in depression, it will be very difficult for you to do the examination yourself. Then, as I said in my talk, that you put the same situation, people, person, so you imagine that somebody else or your friend or somebody you imagine, and that person is going through the same question that what you are having, what you are going through. Then I think it'd be easier for you, because then you are not covered by these emotions, by these anger and desire and ignorance. So it's much easier to give advice than to receive advice. So then I think one way of believing yourself, and then if you cannot give advice to yourself, then of course you can, you put your problems in somebody, you imagine somebody else is going through the same problem that what you are going through, and then once you imagine that, then you try to think what is the best solution for that person. Then whatever you answers you come up with, generally that is much easier way for it's like, how do you say, when you are depressed, it's like quicksand. The more you move, the more you think about your depression, the more you go into the depression. So you start to think about other things, other problems, other than your own depression. Then it'll be much easier for you to come out of the depression. You have to remember that. The more you think about your depression, the more you will be in depressed.
Thank you very much, Your Holiness. And now one more question from the English side. Someone has asked, if you practice meditation and the goal of it is to lead you to the point of no self-grasping, no object grasping, no self, like the Heart Sutra, no eyes, no ears, no nose, all these things, what's next? After you meditate and you achieve this state, what is the next stage, or what do you do after that?
And as I said, it's really easy to feel that, oh, you all my difficulties because of my defilements, and then you understand. We all understand anger is not good. It is not easy. Just like that, if I can repeat, that anger is not good, desire is not good, ignorance is not good, is giving all the trouble, all the suffering in your life is because of your defilements. It is quite easy to say that. But to implement that, when you meditate, when you try to think about all this trouble, then I think it will be very... if you have reached that point of understanding your defilements and understanding the problem, then you will find that your self-thinking and self-cherishing thought is less or not there. If you have not self-cherishing thoughts or self-thinking thoughts, then you will find more relaxed, you will no more feel the uncertainty, you will no more feel, more relaxed. Then that is the time you can focus all your thoughts into, focusing onto the all sentient beings. Once you come out of your self-cherishing thought, then you can concentrate on all other sentient beings. And then that will be the next stage. Once you stop self-cherishing, because you cannot think about yourself and other sentient beings, it'll be very difficult to mix two things together. The more selfless thought you have, then more less self thoughts you will have. Once you reach, of course, is the selfless thought in all the other sentient beings. Because the very reason why we are practicing Buddhism is because of others, not because of oneself.
Thank you, Your Holiness, for reminding us that compassion and the thought to benefit other beings is the root of our Buddhist path, in the same way that Chandigirti said, he gave his homage to compassion before the Buddha. Thank you very much. And Zoe, are there any more questions to ask from the Chinese side?
Yes, we have last one. So this person asked, he said, homage to Rinpoche. So when I do meditation, I always have the picture of the past life, like the fish I killed, the flies I killed, all the way coming to my mind. And then I feel really suffering and I really regret. So how can we deal with this situation?
I think regret is also a very positive thinking, because you understand that what you did was a mistake. You gave pain and do fishing. Now, what the positive thing again is to pray for them, to pray, doing prayer for others, for the fish, for the any kind of things, not just the fish, but it's also important. The more also one thing is that when you practice, when you meditate or when you pray, you have to pray for all sentient beings. The thing about prayer is that if you pray for one person, if you pray for one individual, your power of prayer is just one person. But if you pray for all sentient beings, then your prayer becomes much greater. And that is actually good for the. For example, when you pray, you say, "Oh, I pray that all the fish that I have killed, or the fish that I did the fishing, I pray for them, and also all other sentient beings." That way, you are not just praying for that fish, but all the other sentient beings together. When you do, all sentient beings, it's much wider or much greater prayer than just for one individual. If you are concentrating all your prayer on that, you may think that you are praying for one is more blessing for the one person, but it doesn't work that way. The way prayer work is that the more sentient beings you include in your prayer, your prayer becomes much greater and much more powerful. And that means your prayer for the fish is also much greater. Of course, you physically, if you want to do anything, you can light or lamp offering. You can dedicate your daily practice, your sadhana, your circumambulation of stupas, temples, statues, or your teachers, or whatever you do, you can dedicate your, because if you notice that every time you start a prayer, you start a prayer by saying that I and all sentient beings. So that is also important. And also during your practice, of course, we are always practicing for all sentient beings. And when you end your practice, then again, you dedicate your merits to all sentient beings. That is the three points, which is same all across the teaching of all across the tradition and Buddhism tradition. So, dedicating your prayer for them, and any good deeds you do, by dedicating your deeds, you are actually making it greater. You may think, if I keep something, little prayer or little dedication or little merit that you have gained through your practice for oneself, and then maybe 50% I give it to other people, and then 50% the merits I keep for myself, that doesn't work that way. It's not like a physical, if you are eating a cake, you should say, half of the cake I give it to everybody, and half the cake I keep for myself. It doesn't work that way. So meditation is the more people you include in your, or more sentient beings include, you include your in your prayers, the more greater your merit is. So that's how I think you can also help your dedicate your for the your fish and also for all sentient beings. So that means you are including oneself. So that is one way. Of course, that is one of the most important way is for to be enlightened is of course also gaining merit. Anything, any practice. With your meditation, meditation, compassion, selfless thought, all of this, what it's doing is this, you are gaining more merits. Without merits, you can't be enlightened. You need merits to be enlightened. So, the more merit you get is through by including more sentient beings in your prayer. So, I think that's my, that will be it.